You are listening to Business Day Spotlight.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight podcast. It is our weekly podcast just highlighting some of the top trending issues in the world of business and economics in and around South Africa. And this week, we're going to be taking a bit of a political stance, but you know how it is in South Africa. The politics does affect the business environment. And we're going to be talking a lot around how a lot of the investigations going around in South Africa right now, how those might be affecting public perception around the economy and investor sentiment, because there are a lot of people, I think the last time I checked, 40% of South Africa's bonds are actually held by foreigners. So there's a lot of interest in what's going on in and around the political arena in South Africa. And so that's what we're going to be talking about. And in studio, I am joined by the director and chief economist of Efficient Group. That's a financial services company. That's Davi Root, and he's an economist, and he's going to be giving us some thoughts. He was actually an economist at the South African Reserve Bank and was once an editor at the publication called FinWeek. He says it was a long time ago. And then I'm also joined in studio by Genevieve Quintal, who is the politics editor for the Business Day. So it's going to be quite a good discussion, because you know we've got the economics, we've got the politics, you know. So I think from a good place to start our discussion is just around, at least from Davi, how would you say these different investigations going on in and around South Africa might be affecting the investment for SA Inc. at the moment?
Thanks. Yeah. How does it affect the South African economy, South Africa's investment destination? I think we've already seen the impact of that. We've seen, for example, the rand coming under tremendous pressure the last couple of years, the bond market bombing out at one stage. And I think the most important single number, if you want to pinpoint something, I think it's GDP growth, economic growth, which came in at well below 3% in the first quarter of this year. And that is important because GDP growth, and by the way, economic growth is one of those woolly subjects because we don't really know what to include when we calculate the economy, and economists always arguing what should be included or not. But at least the GDP numbers are consistently wrong. So at least we can compare it over time. But GDP in the end, I guess that is the most important number. And all sort of things are usually referred to as a percentage or as a ratio of GDP. And if the economy is not growing, then people, unemployment will go up and poverty will go up and all that. And we've seen all these sort of things happening the last couple of years in South Africa. Of course, if there's a new development, something new happening, like, for example, firing your finance minister, then the financial markets will react and can react quite viciously, which will have a knock-on effect on the economy eventually. So the rand will fall out of bed if there's an unexpected announcement, and that will have an impact on inflation, which will have an impact on interest rates, which will have an impact on economic growth, and so on and so on. So the whole thing is interrelated in one way or the other. And what I do like about this talk that we're having here is that it is in fact a combination of economics and politics, because this subject that we call economics today used to be called political economy, and perhaps that is a better word for economics, because everything affects everything else. It is quite possible, in fact, if there's a lot of confidence in a political leader, if that political leader make an unpopular announcement of some sorts, that the financial markets could react positive to that because of the trust in a political a leader. I think that the real issues that we have in South Africa is in fact not politics, or rather economics. I believe it is politics. We have so much uncertainty as far as politics is concerned that we really don't know to believe. And I think what happened recently on the Reserve Bank and the so-called change in the constitution or change of the mandate of the Reserve Bank, what should we think of this? Yeah. You know, who is really in charge here? Because we need to know who's going to call the shots before we can decide on how we think the financial markets and the economy is going to react to that.
I'm going to bring in Genevieve just to, you know, maybe get a sense of all the things that are going on politically, there are the investigations and some of the issues that Davi has brought up, but especially from, you know, things like state capture, the PIC investigation, and also some of the issues going on with between Pravin Gordhan and the public protector, all of that stuff. Do you think there is an awareness from political players that this could affect how we are perceived economically?
I'm sure there are a group of them that are aware, but then there's also a group who quite clearly doesn't really care what the West is saying,
yeah.
Business is saying, credit rating agencies are saying. We saw that with the Saab comments. That faction aligned to Ace Magashule and their whole concept that, you know, they sometimes still bring up the white monopoly capital.
Yeah.
They don't care what the markets. And I think quite if you look at comments, and in the past, some have said, why are we even worrying about what the markets say? But then there's the other side who are worried about it. And that would be more like Cyril Ramaphosa and people more aligned to him. And you can see it in the way he comments around things. He tries to tread mm-hmm. very carefully sometimes. But I'm kind of wondering, with the political situation we're in and how all these things are affecting our economy, is the president being too soft?
Okay.
When he talks about these issues, when he comes out and says, no, that's not what's going to happen. I think we need a little more. We need stronger political leadership at this time. Mm. Everyone was very positive ahead of elections. Oh, Cyril Ramaphosa, new dawn, things are going to get better. We saw the SARS commissioner removed. We saw a new NPA head.
Yeah.
But I get the sense that the sentiment is changing a bit now after elections, because we're now seeing this whole public protector issue come out. It was Bosasa, the fight against Pravin. Even the president's comments in terms of the public protector, he's not... some people want him to be more forceful. He's not that forceful. And even taking on those others in his party, he's just not forceful enough. Mm. And that is not helping us.
I'm actually going to just ask a follow-up to that and actually bring up where you started around the Saab comments. Because when Ace said what he said about nationalizing the Saab, et cetera, et cetera, you didn't really see a reaction from Cyril.
Which was a problem.
But you did see players like Tito Mboweni and the Reserve Bank governor actually coming out and say, guys, and actually doing something that's unexpected, sort of going against the party line and actually just saying, guys, this is nonsense. What this guy is talking about, yes, he's our big wig, but leave it alone, forget him. So would you say Cyril is sort of playing it safe by having those people going out and being forceful for him?
I think he thought so, because also Enoch Godingwana was actually one of the first people to come out and say, no, this is wrong. And he's the head of the Economic Transformation Subcommittee.
Mm.
And he's almost seen as a proxy to the president in terms of economic discussion and policy in the ANC, because that subcommittee deals with it. So being the leader, I think he was kind of like, okay, Enoch will say, No, we didn't say this. Then you have Tito coming on. Then you have the Reserve Bank governor. But I think he realized, and as far as I'm concerned, he should have known from the beginning that was not good enough. He waited 2 days.
Yeah.
That's not leadership.
Davi?
Yeah, there are three things I want to add to that. And the first one is that I know a number of politicians, and even politicians that I completely disagree with ideologically, even them, I believe, do not want to damage the South African economy. They do stupid things quite often. And I think the reason why they do this damage is not intentionally, it's because they just don't know. So I don't think they always understand the financial markets and things.
Yeah.
But I do believe people like, for example, Tito, he understands that very well because of his background. The second thing is that people quite often point fingers to the market. The market is some animal somewhere. It's some organism somewhere. It's a thing somewhere. That's not the case.
Yeah.
The market is you and I. It's all of us.
Yeah.
So you can't blame the market. It's us. It's our reaction. And then a third point, and I absolutely agree with you on that, on the president, is that the president is not doing the heavy lifting. He uses the institutions to do the heavy lifting for him.
Mm-hmm.
He's waiting for the NPA to do stuff. He's waiting for these various commissions to do things. He's not doing that. And I think that's wrong. I agree with you. Of course, he's got to play according to the rules.
Yeah.
But sometimes when you are in real, real deep deep trouble. And that's where we are in South Africa. You need a leader that really leads forcefully, and I may even add the word ruthlessly a little bit as well. To say, listen, I am the leader. I'm going to take me forward. It's going to be painful, but we're going to get through this. I don't hear that from the president.
Absolutely. He almost needs, and I don't want to compare him to Jacob Zuma, but if you think, if you took the way Jacob Zuma operated, if this is what I believed was right, I was going to, and put him in the right context. I mean, if he was had good intentions, that kind of leadership would actually work. If it's not working, if you're not working, you're out.
Yes.
And he wasn't scared to be forceful. I'm not comparing the two or saying that Jacob Zuma was
of course
good, but that kind of I'm the leader, so I will do what I think is right, whether it's right or wrong, but I will take charge.
Political leaders, political analysts are going to tell you the reason for that is because he hasn't got all that much political capital. He can't use it. He's waiting for the right moment to start shooting start using the big weapons. But I guess, you know, we are so deep down it that we really do need strong political leadership now, which is lacking.
But can the president actually be that firm? Especially considering, as you said, where the economy is and the fractures in the ruling party right now. Can he actually come out that forcefully against some of these things? Can he actually afford that? Especially because of the balancing act, you know, because, you know, you're trying to... We from the outside, we can see there's cracks, but he can't be seen as acknowledging the cracks, because that, I think it all feeds into the sentiment and all that, because he has an image of the country he needs to portray to South Africans, and he has an image of the country he needs to portray to, you know, the rest of the world. So can he afford to be that firm
on certain issues? Yes. And on certain other issues, probably not. You see, even when he gave the briefing on Bosasa, he keeps talking about unity of the ANC, because the ANC is the governing party. If the ANC is seen to be breaking, then it doesn't bode well for the government. But I think there are certain issues that he can be a little more forceful. And I think Davi said as well, sometimes you're going to have to make an unpopular announcement, which is actually going to be in favor of the country, of our economy. There are times where he's going to have to do that. And the Saab was one of them. It came late. But making that comment, which was very unpopular to a section of the ANC, saying, look, it's not prudent. We cannot change the mandate of the Reserve Bank.
But when he did come out, he did say, we want to nationalize the Reserve Bank, but not yet.
Yes,
that wasn't strong enough.
So that's that teetering on the line of, you know, party and like keeping one side happy. But I do think there are certain issues that he can be more forceful.
We have to be very careful in thinking that we're talking about the good guys and the bad guys in the alliance or in government. That is certainly not the case. It's not the president versus Ajma Kashula, for instance. There are many, many different power groupings within the ANC, and I believe there are two major clashes on its way. The first one is an ideological leadership clash within the leadership of the ANC, whoever that is. And it's not necessarily only between those two heads, but there are some other important role players as well, and I think Tito Mboweni is a very good one. Tito Mboweni has been saying certain things which he believes in because he's got the background. Like, for example, there are too many people working for the state. They're overpaid, nationalization or privatization, that sort of stuff. And the president wrapped him over the knuckles and said, no, that's not part of it. So, and I've got a suspicion if there are, I don't think Tito Mboweni, and if there's somebody I really do like, he's a bit of a maverick, but if there's somebody I do like in government, it is Tito Mboweni. Yeah. And apparently he's not a bad cook either. So that is, so that's somebody,
from his Twitter.
But I think his head is going to roll. So that is one clash that is certainly, but must happen as soon as possible. Who is in charge of the ANC? The second clash is a clash between the ANC and organized labor, especially COSATU, because the problem is with the state-owned enterprises, and they don't want to say this, we need to restructure, they say. What does it mean? It must mean that people must lose their jobs. They're not prepared to say that because they're scared of COSATU. COSATU is the tail that is wagging the dog, and that's the second clash that must happen. And the sooner that happens, the better. We need to cut COSATU down to size because they've become too dangerous, too well organized, and extremely disruptive when they really put their heads to that.
Now, yesterday, I felt that was a good segue for, you know, sort of the next thing, which is just around the fact that yesterday the IMF actually cut the GDP forecast for South Africa. And I'm sure after the IMF, everyone else will sort of, you know, follow suit. Do you guys think, with everything going on, that we might buck that trend and actually come out a bit higher than what the IMF is thinking about, because they're sitting where they're sitting. They might have agents or people that are sitting in South Africa, but from the outside, they're already looking at the situation and saying, oh, guys, it's a bit tough right now. Do you think we might come out stronger?
I think it's a little late in the year for that.
Yeah.
I think too much has happened and too much is still to happen
yeah.
on the political scene, which we spoke about will affect the economy. We've got this whole issue with the public protector, which isn't going away anytime mm-hmm. soon. There's reports, there are court cases. We had the first one yesterday of Pravin Gordhan versus the public protector. There's another one coming. There's the Bosasa. So I don't know. Davi probably has more insight, but I don't think, and I know that the president has spoken about a second investment summit later this year. Do things like that help?
No, not really. let me share some secret with you, with economists. We've got a couple of, you know, tricks and party tricks that we try to do in order to make our estimates. Here's one. Economists, always when you make predictions about economic growth of any country, doesn't matter, in future, it's always up. It's always going to be better, or just about always. Look at the IMF, look at the World Bank, look at the South African Reserve Bank, look at the South African economists, look at myself.
Yeah.
I will tell you next year is going to be better. And when economists revise their numbers, they always usually, there are very few instances where they revise it upwards, but it's always a revision downwards.
Yeah.
Now I expect lower growth and lower growth. And it's really a very, very brave economist that can go out and say, listen, imagine a year ago somebody saying, listen, the economic growth this year is going to be 0.5%. No, I mean, come on. The rest of the world said it's going to be 1.5 or 2% or so. Now you come out with 0.5%.
Mm.
So that is sort of inherent in with the job of an economist. You're always optimistic about future economic growth. The IMF, indeed, they've cut it down to 0.7%. The Reserve Bank is down to 0.6%. Treasury is still somewhere, I think, 1.5% or so. Their official forecast. They're going to cut it down, I promise you. And my own forecast for whatever it's worth is around about 0.5% or even less.
Oh, wow.
And in fact, if you play around with the numbers, and there are so many different ways of doing that, it seems as if the South African economy is stuck in a growth trajectory of approximately 1%. So we're not going to do better. If it's a good rain year, we can maybe get 1.5%. If something going wrong, a rain year or downgrade or whatever the case might be, we're going to go down to 0.5%. So 1% seems to be that growth trajectory in which we are stuck at the moment. And that is happening in an environment where the population growth is 1.6%. So if we just want to keep on a per capita basis, stay where we are, we need to grow at least 1%.
Yeah.
And remember, productivity increases by about 1% roughly. That means that we have to grow the economy at least 2.5% if we want to maintain current employment levels. We're not close to that. And we have 10 million people that are unemployed.
Yeah.
We need to grow at 5%, 4-5%. I promise you, we're not going to get there. And we're not going to get there for a couple of years.
Mm.
So it doesn't matter whether it's 1 or 0.5%. That's really semantics. What matters, it is just not good enough. And in order to get out of this growth trajectory that we're stuck in, we have to take some serious and very difficult decisions and actually implement that. And for that, we need strong political leadership.
Politics ahead, I guess, for the rest of the year. Genevieve, you've already said that it's a bit late in the year for us to be expecting any miracles. But Davi's given us his predictions about some of the tensions that need to be resolved, such as who's actually leading the ANC, and then factors of labor versus you know, government and all that. What do you think are going to be some of the pressing issues? I think the first half of the year has really been dominated by state capture and some of the revelations coming out of the PIC. For the rest of 2019, what are you seeing as some of the big ones?
So state capture is supposed to wrap up September this year, so later this year. It was supposed to be August. I heard that then it was pushed to September.
Yeah.
So we might see maybe November, December, even the first draft report from the state capture inquiry.
Okay.
Depending on what comes out of that. It might, you know, they keep saying they're waiting for that, for the NPA to actually, you know, that the NPA must look into it. So that's one of the things to look out for. Obviously, the public protector matter in terms of whether she stays or is removed, that's obviously also going to depend very much on the ANC in Parliament, whether the ANC in Parliament stands as one, because the DA and the ANC together would have 2/3 majority to remove her from office.
Yeah.
And it seems the party's quite divided on their support for the public protector. And then I guess, you know, especially going into next year, it's the NGC year for the ANC. So then you'll start seeing, they start having to put together their numbers for NGC, branches, etc. So for me, 2020 is going to be more the interesting year politically, and we're leading up to 2020, to the NGC.
For those that don't understand the NGC and how it works,
it's the National General Council. It's basically the mid-term points for the ANC presidency. They do a review. What's happened? What should we be doing? Decisions aren't taken at NGC. There's no... And so when people are talking about they're going to remove Cyril Ramaphosa at NGC, a faction of the ANC, you cannot remove a president at the NGC. It is, and it happened in the Thabo Mbeki era, the NGC before the Polokwane conference. It's the groundswell starts there on talk on removing the president. So it's quite possible that that's where the talk will start and start getting people sort of into it. But it's a review process, basically. What have we done? Maybe these are the things we should take to policy conference 2 years later, which will then go to conference. But it's not a decision-making body.
Last question. Which of everything that's happened this year, which sort of news story or event politically has sort of stuck out to you? I mentioned the one that's really stuck out to me. That's the one around the Saab and the fact that you had Tito Mboweni. Tito Mboweni is outspoken, so I expected that. What I didn't expect was the governor coming out and talking, because he's a very sort of quiet character, only speaks at MPCs, you know, stuff like that. So I found that particularly interesting this year in terms of just shedding a light on what's going on internally in the ANC, and the fact that there are people. It revealed, so like I said in the beginning, it revealed some of the fractures in the ANC, and the fact that the president seems to have these people, his bodyguards and his bouncers, that are there to block and attack on his behalf, and also just how important it is to keep investor confidence important. Because had it not been for trying to keep investor confidence, these guys would not have said anything. They'd have just said, "No, it's just talk." But the fact that they had to come out, you know, is because. And I honestly feel like the RAND is a nice barometer of what's going on in South Africa. Any little thing, there's always like a,
My event for the year is still the elections. I think it showed us how the political landscape is changing, how the electorate is changing, the way people are thinking. And not just in terms of the ANC numbers, but even seeing parties like the Freedom Front Plus did really well. The IFP came up. Patricia de Lille's new party, it just showed the changing lands and the changing landscape of opposition politics as well, which is going to be very interesting. We're coming to a local government election in the next year and a half, almost 2 years.
Yeah,
I think we're going to see some changes again.
Dovi?
Yeah, a couple of things that that is obviously still here with us, and we need to resolve this. The one is Eskom. That's probably number one. Eskom is financially has been destroyed. They're going to get more money now. It's not enough. Not only Eskom, a couple of other state-owned enterprises. And the same goes for the fiscal accounts. The state debt levels are totally unsustainable. So we need to sort that out. You mentioned the RAND. There's one silver lining that I think we have to put a little bit more emphasis on, and that is Lesetse Chikanyago. I think he's doing an absolutely brilliant job. His monetary policy is a little bit on the tight side.
Yeah.
So interest rates are a little bit higher than it would have been under with somebody else. Like, for example, Jill Marcus, he shouldn't would have cut rates by now. But I like that, because that's policy certainty for you.
Yeah.
That's clarity on monetary policy, at least. It is a little bit on the tight side. That keeps a lid on inflation, and that is something that's going to contribute to a more stable currency as well. So there's somebody that's really doing an excellent job. But for the rest, I'm afraid, really, we don't have time to fix those other things. And we better start moving very quickly.
Okay. So we've come to the end of our discussion. Dovi, I'll start with you. How can people follow some of your commentary and see what you are perhaps tweeting online and some of your research?
Yeah, I don't do tweet or Twitter, but Facebook, I've got Facebook. I write a lot of articles, and people are welcome to send me an email and put them on my distribution list. Just remember, ideologically, I think of myself as a libertarian, or maybe you should think of me as an anarchist, but the good kind. So, and that's a kind of political drum that I keep on beating. I believe in individual freedom, and I believe in responsibility for the individual as well.
Yeah. Genevieve?
Twitter, yes. I'm on Twitter. GenMQ, and then read the Business Day and Financial Mail.
So that's been it. Thank you so much to our guests. We had Genevieve Quintal, who is the politics editor for the Business Day, and just giving us some insight into what the political situation is looking like at the moment and some of the things to look out for. She's telling us that we might just get sort of like a first draft of the state capture report by the end of the year, you know, if things willing. She's looking out to see where the public protector fight actually goes for the rest of this year. And then thank you to Dovi Root, who is the chief economist with Efficient Group, and he's saying that Eskom needs to be resolved, and and he's actually praising the fact that Lesecha has actually brought a lot of policy certainty into South Africa. So we're going to be seeing how a lot of these stories actually pan out for the rest of the year. As we heard at the beginning, it's not only economics, it's actually a political economy that we're in. So the politics definitely feeds in, and it is very important. So remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live under the Podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. And then on Twitter, we are #BDSpotlight. And then you can subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you so much to our producer, that is Paige Mueller. And then from myself, Mudiwa Gavaza, and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning. Remember that Business Day Spotlight is a multimedia live production.